Hi, Natalia.
Hi.
So I'm really interested to talk to you, one, about your involvement in the Vue community, as well as RxJS, two technologies that I think are really, really great. But I kind of wanted to start, maybe get to know you a little better and find out how you got into this career as a web developer in the first place.
It's a really interesting question because I'm not a well-established web developer considering my experience in years. I have only 3.5 years experience in web development. And previously, I worked as a database administrator.
Mm-hmm.
I decided to switch my career, I think, after I had a maternity leave. Because I was always interested in web development. I was playing with HTML in Notepad when I was in high school. And I decided to give it a try. And it went surprisingly good because from my experience, front-end development is one of the most exciting because you can almost immediately see the result of your work without even compiling step, usually.
Yeah, nice. It's visual, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's why I really liked it and switched to it.
Is there anything that you're nostalgic for from your time as a DBA? Did you, is there, or anything that maybe carried over that you learned as at that time of your career that you're still using and is kind of fundamental to your work today?
I mean, for me, it was not that useful because it was no SQL databases. It was really outdated stuff like Lotus 1-2-3 and Lotus Domino. So it's like not very useful for web development, but I think I also have an education in computer engineering, and it gives you a nice basis to work on any programming language, including JavaScript.
Yeah, I agree with that. So what's your current stack? What are the tools that you prefer to use today?
So my favorite framework is, I think it's very obvious. It's Vue.js because I'm a part of the Vue.js core team. And it was a long way because I really like this framework. And I also like to use tools as RxJS and GraphQL. I'm a big fan of GraphQL as well.
It's awesome, isn't it? Like GraphQL blows my mind out of anything. I mean, I love technology in general, but GraphQL has absolutely blown my mind.
Yeah, absolutely. I really like it. And I think it's like one of the future things, even though it's considered sometimes today as a very hyped thing. Like, you're jumping on the hype train if you're trying to speak about GraphQL. But in fact, it's just great.
Well, I mean, the hype's because it's awesome to
me.
Like, that's why there's so much hype. It's not like there's a big marketing arm behind it. I mean, I know it's a Facebook project, but it still feels like it's more of, this is just cool. And that's why people love it.
Yeah, it's more like a community project than Facebook, to be honest.
Yeah. I mean, you have Apollo too. So, it's like people are building really great tools behind it and building businesses around it too, which is also awesome. It kind of proves its vitality and gives it a future too, in my opinion. I'm really interested in what drew you to Vue in the first place, but then also how you go from, just being interested in this tool to becoming part of the Vue core team, which I think is an awesome, awesome journey. And I'm curious, how did you go from, being an enthusiast and enjoying a framework to the point where you're actually a core contributor?
For me, my Vue journey started in 2016.
Mm-hmm.
Previously, I was mostly Angular, not even Angular, but AngularJS developer,
mm-hmm.
because there was no such thing as Angular, as we know it until, I think, September of 2016, when it was released. And I was actually going to switch to Angular 2, but the thing was, Angular 2 was released in September of 2016. Just 2 weeks later, Vue 2 was released as well. And I decided to give it a try to compare it to Angular because switching to Angular was kind of scary.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It wasn't AngularJS anymore.
It's totally different.
I know. I have no idea why they named it Angular. It's very confusing. It's still very confusing for newcomers because mm-hmm. when you're trying to search something related to Angular, you always find something related to AngularJS.
Yeah, because we would call it Angular before the switch, and then we had to call it AngularJS if we were referring to the...
Nobody was saying AngularJS, right?
Yeah.
It was just Angular. And I decided to give it a try. And it was very nice. I mean, Vue 2 was very familiar to anyone who used AngularJS previously because of directives, because of templates. But it was like more advanced. And probably it was just a thing like what I wanted to be Angular.
Yeah, it was like, to me, it feels like Angular, kind of the good parts to use that phrase.
Yeah, like the right form of Angular.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because we got virtual DOM and all that other fun stuff with it.
Absolutely. And also, it didn't require a TypeScript. I mean, I like TypeScript, but I liked it already after I used Angular. It was a way to TypeScript for me. And at the moment of 2016, it was like, oh, no additional step to learn. This is nice. Mm-hmm. And also, it had a great it still has a great documentation. But even in 2016, it was just very nice documented framework.
It's friendly, I think, and not in like a negative way. You know, it isn't cute. It's just friendly.
Friendly, like my friend Sarah Vieira likes to say, Vue.js is a kitten of JavaScript.
Yeah.
It's like, it's indeed a kitten of JavaScript. It's very cute, nice, and friendly.
I totally agree with that. Though, I think I read something, and you use TypeScript with Vue. Is that not true these days?
Yes.
What draws you to TypeScript? Like, why do you like that particular variant of JavaScript?
It's a great and funny question, because I think it's kind of Stockholm syndrome. When you need to work with Angular, you get used to TypeScript, and then you just try to use TypeScript anywhere because you're like, oh, but how can you live without types after this?
Yeah, I think because Angular 2 and just Angular now, because, you know, from 2 to 7 or whatever we're on right now, it hasn't changed a whole lot, you know, fundamentally. And what they did was they kind of forced you into TypeScript, and I think really pushed TypeScript forward as a language and contributed to the overall popularity, because now it's everywhere. Like, I feel like TypeScript is all over the place. Anybody writing a library is definitely going to use TypeScript.
Yeah, absolutely. I think like libraries are the mostly typed. And even with Vue, people consider TypeScript not being that integrated into Vue ecosystem right now. But, you know, Vue 3 mm-hmm. is rewritten on TypeScript internally.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's big.
Yeah.
So one of the interesting things, and I haven't seen this in any other framework that I know of, and correct me if I'm wrong, but the Vue CLI feels pretty unique and really cool. And I was wondering, you know, what you think about that and why does Vue have this tool and these other tools that we use aren't presenting these kind of, it's because it's both a visual command, it's a command line interface, and there's like a visual UI where you can get in and really have a nice friendly UI for it.
Oh yes, UI is a great part. Exactly. And Vue CLI, in fact, if we think about uniqueness, it's not that unique because we also have Angular CLI.
Okay.
And from some points of view, Angular CLI may be even more powerful because it can generate components. It's one of the ways. But the thing is, why Vue CLI is unique? First of all, it's because of plugin system. So it's very modular. You don't need to install the whole tool, the whole boilerplate. You can always select what you need and install it like different parts, different modules. And I really liked that Angular CLI followed this path after we implemented it with Vue CLI.
Mm-hmm.
So they started to have these schematics, and you can use them with Angular CLI right now. So it's modular as well. But yeah, we also have a UI part, and UI part is very unique. I'm really proud of Guillaume Chaw, who is the main developer of Vue UI, because it's really great for people who are new to the ecosystem. I mean, if we know old school developers who used to use terminals, consoles, and all this stuff, for them, CLI tool, a command line interface, is really natural.
Mm-hmm.
They're happy to use terminals. But if we take someone who is really new, who's like has 1-2 years of experience in web development, maybe even less, for them, visual instruments are natural, not terminals. And in fact, terminals are kind of outdated. That's why I really like they can start project with Vue UI, and it really helps. And I think right now Guillaume is also developing even more wide instrument. It will include also installing the Node and NPM to the system, so we can install all the boilerplate from scratch.
I mean, that's beginner friendly in so many ways, because I've watched people, new web developers that are trying to learn this, and it's like open up the terminal, and now you're there, you're staring at this terminal, and you have all these things to install and these new commands to learn. And
yeah, I have no idea what you should do.
And it's not even to say you won't eventually get there. And I think there's even an argument that a UI like that will lead to, like, it'll help you when you switch, if you want to switch to the command line. Now you kind of have this relationship between this visual UI and the terminal commands that you'll need to run down the road, perhaps.
Yeah, exactly.
I've heard it said a lot that Vue is probably the most friendly framework tool that we have right now for beginners. Is that something that you've noticed, and why do you think that might be?
Yes, Vue is indeed the most friendly framework. It has a very nice learning curve, and it's really easy to start with, because you can use CLI, but you can also start without any kind of CLI. You can just add a script from CDN and start with it. And The reason for this at first, it's like we have great documentation thanks to Chris Fritz and Sarah Dresner mostly. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's very nice structured and it feels like a tutorial. You can just follow it, like you can read it as a book, and it has great examples as well. And also, I think we have one of the best communities for different frameworks and for the whole JavaScript ecosystem. And I don't know, for me, it's like a family mostly.
Yeah, that's another thing, right? And you know, when we say it's beginner friendly, we're absolutely not saying you can't do advanced projects, because there's a lot of production view going on for major, you know, major scale projects. So it's not, yeah, exactly. Beginner friendly doesn't mean this is a basic tool. It just means that getting into it is easier and kind of a nice ramp up instead of just kind of a smack you in the face situation.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I'm working in the major scale project using Vue.js. It's GitLab.
Oh, yeah. So there you go. And the community is interesting to me because I think that's so important. And I don't think people really discount it, but, you know, like building a community is really actually quite difficult. Building a real genuine community, you know, with your experience, both with Vue Vixens, which we'll talk about in a minute, and, you know, with, you know, web communities in general, like what is the secret? How do we, you know, work towards building better communities across the board?
First of all, what I've noticed for Vue community, it's really, really inclusive and diverse, thanks to both Vue Vixens and both efforts from core team. Like, as a great example of inclusivity, I can say about our Vue bot. So previously we had a bot just closing issues and working on PRs on Vue repositories. And recently we've changed bot messages and we've changed settings for them. So right now we have a nice, really customized message for everyone who contributed to Vue repository. Even it was just a small fix, I don't know, like fixing a typo, and you will, even if your reviewer forgot to say thanks to you, mm-hmm. the bot will care about it and it says thanks. Previously there was a proposal to add a tweet link to Twitter so you can tweet about your contribution because it's nice, and we really try to support first time contributors to our repositories and to treat them nicely as well. And also, it's my personal opinion, I think we don't have any major company backing the framework. Like, it's for Angular, yeah, they have Google to back the Angular, and they have Facebook to back React. But it means we're working on our enthusiasm. We're not paid for our job. We, of course, can have Patreons and open collectives, but mostly, we're just working because we're enthusiasts of this framework, and it helps to form really nice and enthusiastic community.
I think it's amazing because, you know, you mentioned the two major ad networks that fund these other great tools, but Vue, from the beginning, when Evan started this, has been essentially an independent operation, community built, yes, you know, exactly. Driven by a very benevolent dictator, which I think, you know, that carries a negative connotation, but I don't mean it that way. Just, you know, like the person in charge, the person that runs and owns this project, he's amazing, right? And yeah. Has been just an absolute, you know, wonderful steward of a really great tool and community.
Yeah, that's true.
So speaking of communities, you are a part of Vue Vixens. You are the CTO of Vue Vixens and work on the website and all the related technologies. It's a community initiative for women and folks that identify as women. How do you explain Vue Vixens to folks when they're curious about it?
Vue Vixens, we're trying to change this huge imbalance in JavaScript in general and Vue in particular. Mm-hmm. Probably you've seen this gender breakout on the, I think it was State of JavaScript survey.
There's a lot of dudes.
Yes, I think it was 93% of dudes. And it doesn't seem fair and nice. We don't have these rates in like different professions, but JavaScript, for somehow we have this huge imbalance. And we were trying to increase the amount of women in the technology in general, in JavaScript and Vue in particular. We also had examples. It wasn't just an original idea because we have communities like Rails Girls, like Django Girls, like for front-end development, it's Angie Girls, like teaching Angular to women. And it was Jen Looper, our founder, who decided to start an initiative named Vue Vixens. Mm-hmm. And I really like we kind of differ with a name. We didn't include the part girls because, quoting Jen, like, we are not girls anymore. We are women.
Yeah.
Also, it's a nice alliteration, like Vue Vixens. And for those who don't know what vixen is, it's a female fox. So it led to a really nice logo because we have a Vue logo with a fox. So what we do, we are running workshops It's free workshops for anyone who identifies as a woman, and they are basic workshops teaching people to view JS. For our full-day workshop, we include some basics, as well as VueRouter, Vuex, like major parts of ecosystem, and for shorter workshops, it's like usually just building a web application with some API calls.
Part of your job at VueVixens, part of your position is developing the workshops. Is that correct?
Yes. I'm actually an author for all the web part of our workshops, because we also have workshops for native mobile development with native script Vue, authored by Jen Looper. Mm-hmm. And I'm an author for all the web workshops.
How do you approach creating like a really good workshop? Like what's your process when you sit down to work on something like this? Because it's non-trivial, right? It's not an easy process to teach. So what goes into it, and what do you think about when you're building something like this?
When I tried to develop nice workshop, I had two major ideas in my mind. So first, it should be really accessible for anyone, for people without any previous knowledge, sometimes even for JavaScript. It should be really simple and explained well if you have some complicated parts. So even if you have a great prototype map, you need to explain it to people on the basic level. And the second idea was, I didn't want to build another to-do application. I wanted people to create something really entertaining and nice, something they can show to their families and friends and share it with being proud of what they built. So it should be something really nice, simple. It should have images, obviously, because, you know, something that has images is always more entertaining than just plain text. That's why we started with, I think, with a dog API.
I love it.
Yes, I know. Like, of course, people are divided with dogs and cats. So probably we need to introduce cat API as well for those who don't like dogs. But even though when you have a lot of cards with dogs and you can play with them, it creates a nice possibility to make a simple crude application while also being really entertaining. I've edited these workshops later thanks to Chris Fritz and his great advices about how good docs should look like, because there are some core principles for building documentation and workshop. Like, you need to try to explain one concept at a time. It was really hard for me because I was trying to pack workshop with like a lot of things. Mm-hmm. And I was introducing a few things at a single step. It could be really confusing for new people. So like one step, one concept. Don't try to feed them with the knowledge immediately.
With Egghead, that's like one of our core principles too. It's the idea of like single concept, and like, you know, a section is a single concept. And I agree with that. Like it people are so overwhelmed anyway when they're trying to learn something new. Part of the job as a, you know, educator is, how do we ease them into it and make them comfortable so they'll finish? Because that's really hard, is to get people to actually finish. And I think that's important too.
Yes, exactly. Because as a course author, as a workshop author, a documentation author, you operate with a thing named cognitive load. Exactly. Mm-hmm. So people have like limited resource to actually digest something you try to give them. And you need always count on this level of cognitive load for anyone using your materials.
Yeah, there's a great book that Sarah Drasner recommended to me called Cognitive Load Theory that I would recommend to anybody that wants to kind of dig into that. Yeah, because it's a really, honestly, like I think at some point in our careers, we all have to be teachers. So the more we know and understand how to like relay information and help educate our peers and community members, I think, you know, the better the overall community is going to be.
Yes, absolutely. I agree with this.
So one of the things that I think is really super interesting with the VueVixens model is you do these workshops and they are for folks that identify as women, but anybody can use this material. If you go to VueVixens.org, all of the workshop material is free to access. It's really, really accessible, as you mentioned. It's wonderful. It's linear. And you can work through this in a day or a weekend by yourself or with a group of friends or at a local meetup. So this is really like presented and delivered so everybody can use it. So while your groups are a place for women, anybody on the planet can go and use this material and learn from it.
Absolutely. I mean, we have limited resources to run workshops offline because, you know, it's about place, about venue, about catering. So you can't hold everyone. It's like limited resource, and we try to focus on women when we're running them offline. But when these materials are online, it's like there is no additional load on us for anyone who can use these materials. So that's why they're open. So feel free to use them and learn Vue.
I also really love the mini workshops and the nano activities. I think that's a really great idea. And I honestly, I've never seen that before in somebody, you know, like a workshop format, but I think that's just great because a lot of times, you know, full day is daunting, but maybe we can sit down as a group or over Zoom or whatever and do one of these mini workshops and learn together. I think that's a fun and interesting tactic as well. So I'm going to switch it up a little bit because this is something that I've long been interested in, and I'm by no means an expert. And I think this is another area that Angular 2 and beyond really kind of push the envelope alongside of TypeScript, and that's RxJS. I was curious what you find compelling about RxJS and why you think it's a great tool.
Oh yeah, I fell in love with RxJS while using Angular as well. I think it's the most obvious way to reach out to RxJS. But even when I stopped using Angular, RxJS was still with me. It's like an eternal love. And I think there are two great things, even three great things about RxJS. First of it is like it's absolutely amazing tool for dealing with asynchronous behavior. I mean, yeah, we have promises, but promises are really limited. It's just a single thing, right? You have a promise, it's resolved or rejected, and that's it. And RxJS really solves the problem with asynchronous really nicely and in a great way. Another thing I really like is data flow is a first-class citizen. You need to follow the stream. And when you start thinking in streams, it's really easy to identify what's going on here and really easy to follow these streams with RxJS operators, which means you have, it's a third reason, you have a really nice and clean structure of your logic in your application. It's very easy to follow what's going on here, what are steps with transforming the data, what's happening. If you have a look at like, you know, simple drag and drop component written with a simple plain JavaScript in an imperative way, and then compare it to something written in RxJS, it has almost the same amount of code, but the structure is very different. And with RxJS, it's very plain. You can just read it just, you know, row by row and see what's going on. That's why I really like RxJS.
And I think one of the criticisms is that it can be incredibly daunting to newcomers because of the paradigm. Like everything's a stream, right? Like once you start using RxJS, it feels like you kind of have to go all in. And I'm wondering, how do you recommend folks approach RxJS and maybe, you know, start learning it? Like what's the path?
Yeah, while I partly agree, it's like sometimes it's really hard to switch your mind from imperative to reactive programming and to streams. I think the best way is to start with really simple and practical examples. I really like to give an example with like live search, when you're just typing something on the input field and this enables an API call. And when you try to play with this simple example, you can have like the most useful RxJS operators. You can play with map, you can play with debounce time, you can play with a distinct until changed, and it's really understandable what's going on. So just try to take an example, really simple one, and convert it to RxJS using RxJS operators. And I think we have a great course from John Lindquist on RxJS. I followed it once, and I think it's one of the best materials on RxJS available. I really liked it.
We're big fans, like in general, at Egghead. So there's Jaffer Hussain has a End of the Loop series that I absolutely love. Yeah. And then there's Andre Staltz's work, and then John. The three of those have really combined to like, it kind of makes it clear. And it's daunting at first just because of the paradigm shift, I think. But, you know, once it starts to sink in, you start to see problems differently. And it gives you another way to kind of solve these hard problems of async in the browser. And maybe it's not your 100% go-to, but it's definitely worth time to learn and understand. I think it's a great tool.
Yes, absolutely. And I can also add, RxJS community is almost as nice as Vue community from what I've seen. Mm-hmm. I recently had my talk published about RxJS, and I had John Lindquist like reaching out to me almost immediately with the feedback and some fixes to the talk. And I have to admit, I didn't know. I mean, I think nobody knows all RxJS operators by heart.
Nobody.
But, yeah, it's like a lot of them. But he mentioned pairwise, and like you should have used pairwise instead of scan. And I was like, oh my God, I don't know about pairwise. It was really nice because, like, you know how John is kind of celebrity, right? But he's reaching out to you to give you a feedback and to teach you something new about the RigsJS just on his spare time. And I think it's really great that people are so enthusiastic about the RigsJS.
Yeah, it really is. The operators is something you mentioned. There's always a different operator. But then there's also like this core set of operators. It's almost like, to me, I've used the analogy of being like Lodash for, you know, async.
Exactly, like Lodash.
It falls apart after a while, but you know, like just in terms of a beginner mental model to jump into it, like you can reach for it as a tool for that. I mean, it's pretty awesome. So you use TypeScript with Vue, and do you also add RxJS to your Vue applications these days?
Yes, I'm trying to use it. We have an integration. It's named Vue Rx. It's written by Evan Yu.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is using RxJS with Vue is kind of limited due to the nature of your reactivity. So it couldn't be integrated as nicely as with Angular. But you can still use Rx in the scope of the component. And if you want to reach out to your state and to change your state, you can always use side effects. I know it's like not the best way to use RxJS, but still you can use step operator and to change your state. And I'm really using it within like components with complicated UI and UX behavior, like drag and drops, like searches, like all this stuff. And I really like it. And also, it's great in the scope of any framework to build a game.
Yeah. And so have you built RxJS Vue games?
Not Vue. I've built an RxJS game. It's RxJS Breakout. And I was building it right on stage. It was in the scope of my talk.
Oh, okay.
It was a great challenge, but it's nice.
Yeah, that's pretty bold, building that live. So when there's a new idea or something new that you need to learn, whether it's a framework or a tool or a new paradigm in web development, how do you approach your own personal learning?
So first of all, I'm trying to find out why this idea is useful for me and how can I use it in my applications? Because I think learning a new paradigm when it's still really abstract to you and it can be used immediately is really hard. Mm-hmm. Even if you start learning it, you will probably forget everything if you don't use it on practice. It's a first step. Second is, so previously I tried to learn it all by myself, but I found out that actually taking a course is a great investment. It's like you're outsourcing your learning. Sometimes you pay with your money, but in fact, you save your time and you have it like well structured in your mind. So I'm trying to find a good course on this topic and take it and then build build something with it, because without practice, it doesn't work.
Yeah, you have to cement it, and you don't do that by typing along with a course. I think that's like, you know, I'm a big fan of courses in general. And I think I'm with you. Like you type it out and you type along, don't cut and paste, and work through the course. But until you build something, and this is why I love like your pet shop idea. And you know, whether, you know, like a bland to-do list is your thing, or you just want to build, you know, a pet store, build something fun, you know, use the Star Wars API, do something, you know, just kind of zany and silly. It doesn't have to be useful. It just has to, you know, like make you think about the techniques and the tools that you've been learning.
Yes, absolutely.
This is my last question, and I would like to know what you are most excited about. What's coming up, and what do you see that's really, really interesting, you know, beyond what we talked about, you know, your favorite stack right now? What's next for you to learn?
Oh, I think I'm biased about it, because right now I'm excited about the next release of Vue framework.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I'm a part of the core team, and I can say it will be very nice, and it will be a lot faster. And it's so great to see how it's developed, how it works inside. It's not public right now, but I believe it will be a great surprise. And also, aside from Vue, I was really happy with Svelte 3 release, because it's kind of different from all frameworks we have. It's like it introduced new things, and it was really interesting to look at it. And I can say we will reuse some ideas from Svelte as well.
Yeah, I love it. And you know, you talk about like the churn or whatever, which I feel maybe a slowdown or isn't even actually a thing. But I absolutely love the idea that developers, you know, aren't happy with the status quo and want to try something new and put it out into the world. And that's amazing to me. And those ideas, you know, spread, right? Like, it's not really, there's not a competition between all these frameworks. If you really pay close attention, I feel like the developers across the board are really just collaborating, like in a kind of a meta sort of way. But it's a like this broad collaboration to give us better, you know, better tools overall.
Yes, absolutely. I think like all the framework words are just in the mind of some people, because if you have a look at the market, we don't have like 100% developers using at least one framework. I mean, there is a huge amount of developers using jQuery or even not using jQuery.
Right.
And it's like a lot of space for new frameworks and for old frameworks to develop.
Yeah, there's so much space for new ideas and people to explore them. And I Absolutely. Feel like anything to the contrary of that, like any non-welcoming is not the approach. Like we should embrace that and allow people to explore, because that's how we advance the state of the art.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, Natalia, it was really great talking to you today, and I really appreciate it. Thank you. Thank you very much. Where can people find you on the internet?
Thank you for inviting me. And I'm a very obvious person, so I have my name and surname everywhere on the internet. Nice. It's like on Twitter, it's just N_Tepluchina. And I have my Natalia Tepluchina on GitHub as well. And it's like the two most popular places I'm actually paying attention to.
That's the way to do it. It makes SEO really easy.
Yeah.
Well, and if you have a unique name, I'm lucky too. I dominate my SEO from my name, and yours was easy to Google as well. So.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you very much, and have a great evening.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.